This episode is brought to you by the American Homebrewers Association, organizers of HomebrewCon, the annual gathering of the homebrew faithful. This year's event takes place in Nashville, Tennessee, June 18th through June 20th. Registration opens March 10th. Learn more at homebrewcon.org. That's homebrewcon.org. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, February 27th, 2020. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, we head down to visit Fort Smith Brewing, which is based in the old military base where the King of Rock and Roll got his hair cut. We'll also talk to Fort Smith brewer Quentin Willard about the Arkansas Brewers Guild and Arkansas Craft Beer Week, which is coming next week. Go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. And if you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other Basic Brewing gear. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook as well. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. Thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. Financial supporters have already had access to the video episode that I'm planning to make public on Friday. It's a video about my No Boil Maibock paired with shredded chicken tacos that I made in my Instant Pot. Super easy beer to brew and super easy and quick recipe. Both were delicious. And it's fun cooking for Steve and returning the favor after he cooked for so many video episodes in the early days. Today, I'm planning to keg a beer that I made loosely based on a recipe from Peter Simon's latest book, Guile Brews. Guile Brews is another historical exploration from Peter with history and recipes from the UK and Ireland stretching all the way back to the 1800s. And I'll be talking to Peter about the book on his on this show in a couple of weeks. The recipe that I chose from Guile Brews was a mild from 1886 that called for number 2 invert sugar, which is a dark inverted sugar. On a whim, I decided to use dark Cairo syrup as a substitution because Cairo syrup, according to my research, is an invert sugar. But this dark Cairo syrup has molasses added. So Peter was justifiably probably skeptical. So I'm very interested to see how that turns out. Fermentation went very well, but I haven't tasted it yet. So fingers crossed about that one. And speaking of brews that may or may not turn out well, you may remember an email last week from a listener Ryan who brewed a beer that was way too sweet because his mash temperature was accidentally very high. And he asked, how to save the beer. Well, I had a few suggestions on how he might salvage the beer, but listener Alan had another take. Alan wrote, "I like your suggestion about using Brett or some sort of culture, but I honestly feel the batch is gone. If he's into cooking, I would consider cooking with it. If not, I would probably dump it. Don't be afraid to dump. I know no one wants to, but I do not feel that it's worth his time trying to salvage it or hope that it gets better. Like you said, maybe Brett can handle it, but I do not feel he will get the desired results with hoping for the best." Well, thanks, Alan. Sometimes a beer does go so wrong that it's wise to dump it, say if it gets contaminated or infected or gets nasty. It's difficult, if not impossible, to save that. And I'm not sure exactly what I would do, to tell the truth, if I were in Ryan's shoes. But it's fun to try to think of ways to snatch victory from the jaws of defeat. Listener Adam also wrote in after hearing last week's hop sampler with a complete list of the hops that we've featured in the series, and a very long list of candidates for future hop samplers that we haven't done. And I was surprised by some that we haven't tried, such as Sirachi, Ace, Summit, and Tetnang. But there was a ton of them on there. So I appreciate all the work that Adam did to put that list together. And I hope that Steve and I can use that as an inspiration for future choices. We all love choice and options, don't we? Well, when it comes to electric brewing solutions, our friends and sponsors over at High Gravity in Tulsa have a ton. Along with their own line of Warthog controllers and turnkey systems, High Gravity has a selection of electric brewing systems manufactured by other companies, too. And if you go to highgravitybrew.com, you can see how you can configure a system to fit your needs from 5 gallons all the way up to 2 barrels. And if you head on over to youtube.com/highgravitybrew, you can see a new video that Desiree and Dave produced updating the upgrades to the Warthog Bruna bag system since the previous video that they made. There's a new controller. It's the one I have, the Warthog EBC-130. A reconfigured temperature probe. It's now closer to the heating element to get more accurate temperature readings. New stainless steel connectors that are less likely to clog with hops and are easy to disconnect. New spray head, an upgraded pump, and other cool features. The system was already awesome, but now it's even better. Plus, you can now upgrade at an additional cost to a Spike brew kettle for the 240-volt brew-in-a-bag system on highgravitybrew.com. You know, I have a Warthog system from High Gravity, and I love it. It takes the pain out of propane, and if you use the code EBC75BB on highgravitybrew.com, that's EBC75BB on highgravitybrew.com, you can save $75 off your electric brewing purchase. That's at family-owned and operated highgravitybrew.com. Okay, let's head on down to the old Fort Chaffee to visit Quentin Willard of Fort Smith Brewing Company. Well, Quentin Willard, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Welcome, Lord. Thank you for having me.
Welcome to my brewery.
Yeah, you're welcoming me here to the brewery. Where are we at? Yeah.
Fort Smith Brewing Company, here in Fort Smith, Arkansas, out in Chaffee area. Chaffee is an old military base that they've now converted to commercial properties, industrial properties, residential. So it's a whole little community forming over here. And we're kind of right in the middle of it all.
So this used to be an army base.
That's correct. That's correct.
And what purpose did this building serve?
This particular building was a PX in the last several years of its life. We get customers actually come in here that have shopped here. We've got one particular customer who actually met his wife here. Yeah. She was the cash register, and he was buying some clothes or something, and they met. And so it's cool the history that the building has.
And there's the claim to fame of Fort Chaffee was that one certain famous individual came through here.
Elvis Presley did get his haircut here. Yeah, the museum is a couple streets over. Yeah, we definitely have some beers inspired by that. That's for sure.
That's definitely cool. How long have you talk about the brewery? Where did you start, and why did you start? And you know, give me the whole elevator pitch.
Oh, 2 minutes. Where and how we started? Well, I mean,
we got about half an hour, so you know, take right. your time.
All right. Yeah, we did this. We came up with the idea about 7 years ago. Really, opened up a brewery, and we knew Fort Smith's economy was hurting really bad. I was actually living in New England at the time, where beer's plentiful, and you see how big a influence the brewery scene has on the local economy, on local social, you know, interaction. It's just an up-and-coming product and industry that has been long forgotten since Prohibition, and so it was really cool to see that evolution in New England. And when my friends in the local area called saying, we need help in Fort Smith, the economy's drowning, I was like, well, it's pretty obvious that a brewery is what the city needed. And so then we were looking for a spot to open in the city. There's lots of different options here in Fort Smith. But nothing struck home quite as much as an old military base being repurposed for economic development to kind of suit our needs. And, you know, it's massive old structures, you know, beautiful, beautiful buildings from a structural point of view. On the outside, you wouldn't probably say as much. It's not necessarily architecturally pleasing, but for a brewery and sturdiness and and hearty and all those things you're looking for. It had exactly what we were looking for. So that's kind of what brought us here, is just the need for economic development in our hometown. As we're all, everybody started us from here. So we're just looking to do our part in helping the community out.
Yeah, back in my day when I was in TV as a reporter back in the late 80s, Fort Smith was the home point or the hub, and Northwest Arkansas was kind of there was a bureau up there. Now it's flipped, where Northwest Arkansas, Fayetteville and Rogers and Bentonville is really booming, and so we're seeing that demographic or the statistics flip in this area.
Absolutely, yeah. And so when I'd been away for many years, and so when my friends told me that, who stuck around and talked about how terrible Fort Smith was doing versus Northwest Arkansas, it just didn't make sense to me. Came home a few times and kind of witnessed it firsthand, and to me it was a travesty, to see my hometown go to such disarray and impoverishment and different things like that, which once was a thriving city, once was an economic hub for Arkansas, is now is just kind of a laughing stock. So, nobody ever wants to see that happen to their hometown. So, yeah, a huge motivation for coming back here and doing what I could to help out.
Well, welcome back. But Fort Smith does have a positive history in the growth and establishment of craft beer in Arkansas.
Oh, yeah. Fort Smith is where it all started. The very first brewery in Arkansas was here in Fort Smith, Noble Brewing Company on the other side of town. Then the first microbrewery in Arkansas was here in Fort Smith, in the early 90s, the Weidmans. And then they're the ones who also changed laws and legislation that allowed microbreweries to be here in Arkansas. So Fort Smith has forever been an important part of the beer industry for Arkansasers, and so we're carrying that torch, and hopefully bringing in even more and more. And that's why, that's kind of the inspiration behind the 62 Taps, is we want to make Arkansas a hub of craft beer in the South, or at least this region of the United States. And so we need more and more craft beer, and we need to show our local constituents, all of our local customers, like this is the future of beer, not the big brands and things you see advertised wildly and with pretty women and beautiful looking suds on TV. There's a lot more that goes into it, and a lot more community based and craft and artisanal attributes that go into making a beer instead of just some average stuff that they produce in random factories all over the world and then ship to you over months and months. And then it's, yeah, you know the story. Yeah.
You're singing to the choir here, or preaching to the choir. Yeah, it's wonderful to come into your tap room and see all of these taps lined up from across the state, and from Northwest Arkansas and Central Arkansas, Hot Springs, which is where I'm from originally, it tells a wonderful story about the craft beer movement in the state. And we'll talk about that a bit later as well, but you were talking about the Weidmann's brewery. You've got a piece of that here.
Yeah. So we were fortunate enough to, or unfortunate enough, however you want to look at it, get a hold of the original microbrewing system that was started the whole microbrewery scene here in Arkansas. The Weidmans had handcrafted. They got local welders and different craftsmen to create this brewery system, engineers to design this brewing equipment right here in Fort Smith. They had been sitting over in the old Noble Brewery, which was Weidmans where they started. It's been sitting over there for the last 30 years, wow, collecting dust. So one of the Weidmans came to us and said, "Hey, you guys in the market for a bigger system?" And we happened to be, and so they sold us on it. Had no idea what we were getting ourselves into. There's a few updates we had to make, mostly just replacing joints and different things like that. So I laugh about whether it's good or bad we got into it, but it's a very basic system, very primitive, which I tend to really enjoy and really like. A lot less things to go wrong with it. It's kind of, it reminds me of like the old vehicles, you know. You can just open the hood and tweak a little bolt here and there and get it all up and running again. And so, you know, being in the industry for several years and talking to other brewers, I guess you're always going to have troubles with the equipment. I guess there's always something failing on it, and you always got to get a technician in. At least with ours, it's something we can look at. We can handle, something we can control ourselves. So that's a nice part of the system. But there's no computers, that's for sure. It's, you know, you're hand feeding things, moving, you know, the different hoses and different things like that. But that's also the joy of brewing, I think. So we just still get to stay close to home as far as keeping it crafty and having our hands in the making, the brewing process. So I'm excited about that. And more than anything, it makes a lot more beer than we used to be making, which is much needed. So, yeah, we have that old piece of history. We don't want to see that get lost. It's a really robust system, you know, considering it's lasted this long. And when we first found it over at Noble Brewery, we fired it up. We turned it on in its position, and it fired up. It created steam, you know, boiled some water.
Wow.
So, it's a good machine. If it's set there for 30 years and we're able to flip a couple switches and it turns right back on. So,
yeah, it's kind of cool. It's steampunk looking or something, you know, something out of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang or something. But you went from 3 barrels to now 7.
That's great.
And running on steam, like you said. And, you know, if you can heat water, you can make good beer.
Absolutely. Yeah. That was the azimuth test. If we were going to mess around with the brewery. The real trick though was that it was on multiple floors over at Dozy Place. We had a part of the equipment on the third floor, some of it was on the second floor, some of it was down in the basement. So you can imagine the logistics involved in getting that all the way to our brewery over here.
I guess you're lucky that the squirrels and rodents and things like that didn't take up residence in there.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
Well, what am I drinking here? We've got a Flight of Four in front of me. And what do we got first?
The first thing is the Trailblazer IPA. That's probably our flagship IPA. If anybody wants to get an IPA, this is one we recommend. We get a lot of people come in saying, I don't like IPAs, yada, yada, yada. I don't know if they had Goose Island or what they're drinking. I don't know what turned them off of IPAs, but that's the IPA that converts most people to IPAs. It's got 6 different hops in it, which is something I've kind of learned throughout the brewing process. Actually, Liz over at Preston Rose taught me this also, is definitely use multiple ingredients. Don't stay as basic as a recipe show online. You know, most of them choose, you know, 1 hops or, you know, 2 grains or something like that. So Liz kind of showed me that using variety and complementary grains and hops and different things will give you a much better, much more balanced flavor. And so that's what the Trailblazer IPA is. It's just your standard IPA that anybody can enjoy. Non-IPA drinkers, IPA drinkers, everybody tends to really enjoy that one.
Yeah, it's got a nice, solid malt bill. It's 7.2%, which surprises me. It doesn't taste that big, but it's got a nice, solid malt base. It is multi-layered in the character of both the malt and the hops. There's a spiciness in there that it reminds me of not cinnamon, but, you know, some kind of, along with the other fruity, you know, kind of hop character, there's a spiciness in there too that really makes it interesting. But the bitterness is also solid, but it's not enough to scare somebody away if they were just getting into IPAs or just getting into pale ales.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know about the spiciness part. I'm not sure. You know, everybody, that's the beauty of the craft beer, is everybody picks up different flavors. I'd be curious to know where that's coming from. So.
maybe just be that gum I was chewing a little while ago. Who knows? It may, you know, the thing about my palate is, you know, if I tasted the same beer tomorrow, it may taste, you know, completely different. It just all depends. So talk about your hopping strategy. Talk about, you know, get into a little of the details if you don't mind.
You know, it's the basics, I guess. Your bitterness at the beginning, and then some aromas towards the end. And then for a little bit of flavor and such in the second fermentation. So we rarely use 14% alpha acid hops at the beginning. We just don't find too many local customers, consumers really wanting that hoppiness, that bitterness and such. So we'll stick to 7 or 8% alpha acid hops at the beginning. And then at the end, those 14, 15% alpha acids, those are the fun ones you can really get some aromas out of. And even just the slightest bit of bitterness at the front of the tongue, but not lingering or anything else like that. And so that's kind of how we do our IPAs and such, and kind of how we think through which hops to use. With the, like I said, the other beers and such, we don't rarely ever get 14% alpha acids at the beginning. We did make one called the Bitter Cock, a West Coast IPA, using lots of West Coast hops. And I didn't particularly care for it, but we had a few customers and consumers who did. They thought it was the best thing since sliced bread. But I'll say it wasn't our number one seller. But the few people who enjoy that super, super bitterness loved it more than any IPA they've ever had. So, you know, it's a... That's the difficult part, you know, with brewing beer and picking a recipe is you're not going to please everybody, mm-hmm. you know, and something you may think is disgusting, you just got to find that friend that enjoys it and let him help you get rid of that batch, and then tell him he's got to pay for the next one if we ever do it again.
Yeah. I'm sure there are home brewers out there who are quite familiar with that. So mostly American hops in here? Or
no, all over the world. We've got some English hops in there, some German hops. German Hallertau we use in a few of our recipes. It seems to be a nice, pleasant flavor all around and middle-range bitterness and such. So, yeah, we've got a variety of hops. We don't. And that's part of that, keeping the complexity and multi-layered kind of value in our beers.
Maybe I'm getting some of that noble hop character in there. I'll just make stuff up and sound like I know what I'm talking about. And what's beer number two?
Beer number two is our barrel-aged IPA. And so...
Are you sure? I think...
Or maybe not.
That's it.
Club Pearl. Okay.
Okay. All right.
Club Pearl, Smoky Saison. Yeah, I probably should have wrote those down.
Well, I have a feeling that I'll be able to identify the smoky beer, I hope.
Yes. Yeah.
My palate's not completely out of whack.
Yeah, you would know exactly. Well, as soon as you drink, you'd know. That's actually our base Saison, our Pearl Star Saison, probably our number one beer as far as everybody can drink it. The Pearl Star, most people don't like Saisons. And again, it's just like people don't like IPAs, you know. They just haven't had a good one, you know. So our Saison, everybody can drink. They think it's the greatest thing. Better version of Blue Moon kind of is what most people pick up on. But this particular one is our Club Pearl. And this is where we put charred oak staves inside of it so that it gives that really smoky flavor. We have, you know, it's fun selling lots of beer in one style that everybody loves. Like, don't get me wrong. For business, fun. You know, love seeing those numbers come in. But for a brewer, it's nice to experiment. It's nice to play with different things, variations, and give different flavors, unique flavors that you don't typically see. And so that's the Club Pearl. You know, you got a smoked Saison, which I don't know that I've ever had one before. And so that's kind of what we're going for that Club Pearl. Take an amazing beer and then just add some new element to it.
So no smoky malt.
No. Just the oak staves, charred oak staves, which gives it that really, that smoked or burnt or kind of that, I don't know, smoky flavor, you know?
Yeah, it's more of a campfire. It makes me think more of a campfire than, say, you know, some smoked grains give you more of a smoked meat character, either smoked salmon or you know, bacon, or you know, but this is more of a woody campfire character, but it's not intense, and that's what I like smoked beers, but I don't like to be smacked in the face with smoke. I don't want to feel like I'm licking an ashtray, you know.
Yeah.
And this does well. At first I was like, are we sure this is a smoky beer? But then after the swallow, it came just a lingering smokiness, which is really nice to kind of say, there's something extra there that I didn't notice in the beginning. So very, very well done. What's the base Saison beer like?
The base Saison is everything you taste at the beginning without that smoky finish. It's kind of very little sourness to it at all for the base Saison. It's got orange peel and coriander, and then the German Hallertau hops. And what else did we do to it? Belgian Saison yeast. So the Belgian Saison, we find that to be a little bit more full body, a little bit more girth than the French Saisons and such. So we use a Belgian Saison in the Pearl Star.
It's very nice. It's very quaffable. I say drinkable too much. So, but, you could sit out on a warm day, out on the deck that you're planning to build and just enjoy the day. Very nice. Now, you, part of the reason that got me down here was I got an email from the Arkansas Brewers Guild saying that Arkansas Craft Beer Week is coming up, and they listed you as one of the directors. So I'm going to put you on the spot and talk about the Brewers Guild, and then talk about this week that's coming up.
So the Brewers Guild is probably one of the greatest institutions, organizations that brewers, homebrewers, anybody, even cider makers, winemakers, any craft alcohol creating entity wants. The organization has created so many amazing laws, lobbied for so many amazing laws for us breweries. And so it's obviously, it's an organization that's very near and dear to my heart. It's what allows us to do what we do and helps us legislatively conduct business. And even for home brewers, it can influence the laws there also. And so what the Arkansas Brewers Guild does is say, we want breweries in dry counties. I don't know if you guys know, last year they just approved a bill allowing breweries in dry counties. Hmm. And so somebody comes to us with a great idea, like, we want to be able to sell beer on Sundays. Somebody came to us, the Brewers Guild, a while back and said, we think we should be able to sell beer on Sundays, even though you guys all know in the state of Arkansas you can't sell beer on Sundays. And so the Brewers Guild got in front of Congress. They pushed and pushed and pushed, and guess what? Breweries can sell on Sunday. And so that's what the Arkansas Brewers Guild, if you guys can think of a great idea, something that helps us conduct better business and, do more for our consumers, then let us know. And then we will do what we can to push that legislation in front of Congress and see some positives come from that. One big thing is we're allowed to sell other craft beer at our breweries. And so that's allowed me to bring more craft beers to Fort Smith because of legislation that Arkansas Brewers Guild pushed. And so the world's we're actually really good right now. The state of Arkansas is better than most states when it comes to laws benefiting breweries. And so sometimes we struggle finding even better ways to make our industry even more welcoming or even better. So anything you guys can think of, my next push is, pay us to be here, but no, I don't know how far we're going to get with that one, but for real, anything you guys can think of that can make the nature of conducting business for breweries in Arkansas better, we'd love to hear your ideas. We'd love, because if you're a consumer, you like going to breweries, you like craft beer, and there's some law that doesn't allow them to do something that you want, let us know, and we can lobby for that and potentially give you guys, consumers, more and more beer and a better product.
It's a tricky state. I did some research a little while ago, and like half of the counties in Arkansas are either dry or moist, which people don't like that word, but but almost dry. And so it's a state where we have a history of being very conservative in those regards. And so it is, we've got breweries in Benton County, which is amazing to me that that's happening. You know, there's a brewery in Siloam Springs, Arkansas, you know, which is amazing. So I know that it's, you know, that this goes out all over the world, and it's, this is very specific, but I think that, you know, it's reflective of what's going on across the whole country. So thank you all for doing what you're doing. And I just talked to a brewer up in Missouri recently who said that, you know, he's brewed in Arkansas as well, and he said what you said, the laws in Arkansas are pretty darn good right now. So so what's Arkansas Craft Beer Week?
Arkansas Craft Beer Week is just a celebration of all the craft beer that's in Arkansas. There's been a lot of progress since the 90s, since the first microbrewery opened up here in Fort Smith. And so what we want to do is applaud those efforts and have a time to celebrate with our customers how great craft beer is here in Arkansas and the country as a whole. And so we're looking forward to that week, having all sorts of festivities, maybe specials for our customers. But what, more than anything, just kind of a remembrance of this amazing industry that we're a part of. And every single consumer is a part of that, too. We wouldn't be here if it weren't for the consumer and pushing our industry further and further. And so it's an applause to the consumer and an applause to the industry as a whole.
And we're talking the first week of March.
That's great.
Which, as of this, when people are hearing this, next week. So just check with your local craft, your local Arkansas craft brewery and or beer dispenser and see what's going on. So I think that's cool.
Yeah, we cannot wait to thank our customers enough for how much they've given the craft beer industry here in Arkansas. There's so many breweries popping up and some in the middle of nowhere, and they're still getting support. And that's 100% due to the customer. You know, that's the customers have been driving this industry, and we want to thank them for that. So we're super excited about that week and everything we can do to celebrate all the successes we've made thus far.
Awesome. So what's beer number three?
Beer number three is the barrel-aged IPA. So the same charred oak staves we put into an IPA. And we put a little bit more, so you're probably going to make it a little bit stronger. We figured with all the hoppiness, it could handle a little bit more smokiness. You know, we kind of took the easy route. We didn't want to sit 6 months inside of a barrel. And we didn't want to get – some barrels get a little bit too bourbony, a little bit too overpowering and some other flavors, and we just were experimenting trying with these charred oak staves. We bought a whole bag of them, so we needed something to do with them, and we got a lot of customers that have been requesting this flavor profile. Unique to me, I'm not super familiar with it, but I, again, you know, I like experiment, I like trying new things and new flavors and such. So they have been popular, but we are always tweaking. We're always finding ways to make them better and stuff. So what are your thoughts on it?
I think it's nice. I think it's the fruitiness of the hops are kind of – it's kind of brought down a bit, and the bitterness to me is come up a little bit, which is fine. But then there's that smokiness here just on the backside. You know, it's not in your face. It's very nice. It's a super easy drinking, but there's a lot to think about while you're sipping. How did you, like, if you're talking to a homebrewer out there, where did you get these oak staves and how do you treat them before you put them in the beer, and what's the process?
So these particular oak staves we bought online. They're already charred and everything, used for this exact thing. You know, people who don't have 6 months to wait on a beer inside of a barrel, because you could just buy a fresh barrel that's been charred right before they put them in the bourbon and such into it. You can buy some of those fresh barrels and get the same effect. But you can also just buy the chips that have already been charred. To, you know, and there's different degrees of charring. There's 1, 2, 3 different levels of charring. And so we got the oak staves. We threw them in there. Ran with it. Kind of liked it like that. The other option, now that I've seen the oak staves and I see how simple they are, I guess technically you could find some of the old, you know, go to Walmart and get some of that mesquite or apple, and I think that's what we're going to try, is some of those oak chips, maybe do some of our own charring, because you know this is done during secondary fermentation. So between the charring and the alcohol in the beer, it should not create any additional contaminants. So you should be safe there. Shouldn't create any off flavors, that unwanted off flavors, or the yeast shouldn't be eating anything you don't want it to be eating. And so, that's why I'd recommend a home brewer is, and we would be very interested to know if somebody out there does decide to char their own. Again, the only issue with that is quality control. It's going to be hard to get the exact char on all of them and, you know, reach that level of charredness that you're looking for that you can just buy online. But for affordability reasons, it goes a long ways.
Yeah, it sounds like a good good reason for a small batch experiment, you know, so just to try it with a small batch of beer first. I've thought about that myself. I just wonder if, baking the oak chips, you know, for a while to kind of help sanitize them before you even before you char them, just to, you know, I'm a belt and suspenders kind of guy, you know, on some of these things, but I'd be interested to see, you know, knowing my audience, people have already tried it, so cool. Yeah, all these, we're in the golden club here. All these beers are golden. Is that on purpose, or is this?
It just happens to be what the samples I got. Yeah, we definitely love playing with the colors. It's so fun getting the variety of colors. We haven't branched into some of the black IPAs and black saisons and such, and so that's going to be the next level we go with the color profiles. But being 2.5 years in, we're still just constantly tweaking recipes and playing around and doing all different sorts of styles of beer. You know, we've probably brewed 20 different varieties of, you know, from Belgian Saison, French Saison, IPAs, West Coast IPAs, whip beers, Weissens, Hefeweizen. We've kind of ran the gamut of the styles of beers. And so I guess that would kind of take us into year three, is in bringing in, playing with the colors and playing with some of the ancillary things that don't necessarily affect the flavor as much as just that overall experience, consumer experience.
Well, it sounds like you're having fun. And so what are the plans? Are you planning on staying at this level, or are you planning on distribution at some point, or, you know, what's, everybody's got a different focus or a different approach to this thing?
Absolutely. And it's a great question, and everybody has to answer it one day. For a brewer, what I've read, don't quote me on it, I've just read one or two articles about it.
This is all off the record.
there are three tiers to being a commercial brewer. You got the micro guys, the local guys, you got the regional guys, and you got the national guys. The local guys do very well because they have their local following, you know, and they can sell so much. Depending on how big their town is that they're in, they're going to reach a cap of how much money they can make. But it'll be good, you know. There's good margins there. It's steady, but there is a cap. The national guys, they've got massive facilities, efficiencies out, you know, amazing, like they're doing phenomenal too. So there's a lot of money to be made there also, because you're national and you're more efficient than everybody else. There's that regional guy, that middle ground going from local to national. Those guys struggle a lot, because they're still producing on a local level, but trying to compete on the national efficiency level. And you hear a lot of them struggle to get through that, go from local to regional, and then to break that bottom floor of the national. So we have zero plans right now to go to get into that regional arena. That just looking at the numbers and talking to people and just understand the market, I can understand just the small distribution we do here in Fort Smith. It's difficult enough, you know. Imagine trying to push your beer in Oklahoma, where they have their own breweries, and you got to you're competing with some of those guys. So, plus, I'm just an old-fashioned guy when it comes to brewing and stuff. I think it should be local. I've had some amazing beers at Sam Adams Brewery in Boston, and I've had some really Sam Adams beers all here in Arkansas. So I've witnessed that with multiple beers from multiple breweries. And so to be able to keep that awesome flavor across the country and, you know, outside of your, you know, small geographic location is extremely difficult. Probably, I can only imagine the additional resources you have to spend to do that, and for what? Just to make some more cash, you know? So for us currently, it is not on the table. It's not in the docket. We love distributing here and around Fort Smith. We want people to hear about our brews and how great they are and come to Fort Smith. We want them spending their money here in Fort Smith at hotels, restaurants, coming all the way, wherever they have to come from, come to Fort Smith to try the best beer they've ever heard of. So that's kind of our goal, is to boost the local economy here. It'd be great to make more and more beer, and everybody's heard of your brand and all, but at what cost, you know? And so we really care more about Fort Smith and seeing Fort Smith's economy grow.
Well, good for you. It seems like to me, the more people I talk to, the more this is kind of a sweet spot. You're completely in control of your product. You're making what you want to make. You know, if you want to make a smoky, IPA and play around with things and see what your customers, you talk to them face-to-face. You know, there's so many homebrew. Everybody who's made their first batch of homebrew wants to open a brewery. Steve Wilkes, who owns the homebrew shop up in Fayetteville, says, everybody wants to open a brewery. So, it's good for people to get this information from somebody with experience, to get out there and do some research and set up their business plan and set their goals and go into it with some eyes that are a little more wide open, you know.
Absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head with that statement, that you get a lot more control at the local level. And if you want to change your recipes and do whatever you want, you can do it, you know. That is a beauty. You could never push a charred oak stave, IPA, how many people are going to get that? It's unique and it's fun and we enjoy drinking it, but how many times are we going to keep brewing that? And do we expect a huge following for it? Absolutely not, but because we're small enough and our customers just love coming here in the environment and love to have the conversation of how we came up with it and why we did it, I think that is more important to us, and that we have a lot more value in that than just trying to push beers,
Beer number four, the final beer, is it's a tart one. It's nice. It's you've got an evil grin on your face. it's not the most sour beer I've ever had, but then again, my palate is probably numb from all the sour beers that I've had over time. But it is pretty darn tart, but it's got a nice malt backbone. It's kind of like a sweet tart. You've got that the maltiness, the sweetness of the malt bill to go along with that tartness, and so it's well rounded, it's well balanced. Talk about this beer.
That's our super sour, and you're absolutely right. For all the craft beer drinkers, it's not going to be that sour for you, but for Fort Smith, Arkansas, this will be the most sour thing they've ever tasted.
Yeah, it's probably good to name it that, so they won't be surprised.
Yeah, we've experimented with several different sours. This is our most sour one that we've created, and when the local consumer comes in, you can tell that it's completely shocked to their system. So we knew we had to name it accordingly. We didn't, just calling it a sour wasn't going to do it for some of our consumers. So. Yeah, this one, wildly popular. It's very, for the sour drinkers, there's no additional fruits or anything. It's just a sour beer. It's we're not doing some fun coffee, this, that, other sour with the pomegranate and this. It's just a sour beer, But it's, like you said, it's not too sour. So you still taste the beer in it. It's still a comfortable beer, comfortable beverage, apart from the sourness that you get to it.
Yeah, it doesn't take a layer of skin off your tongue.
Yeah.
So do you know what the pH is about, or what you were shooting for?
I wish I did. That one's a wild sour. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Probably another reason why it's so mild. We just open ferment that one. So the original version of it was called the Elvis Presley.
Because his dander is still in the air here, exactly. After getting his hair cut.
That's exactly what we're going for. So you get a little taste of Elvis when you have the super sour. It makes your lip quiver a little bit, curl up like
oh. Wow, so that's a wild beer. I'm surprised at how clean it is. I mean, being a wild beer, sometimes you do wild fermentation and it's kind of like, it's cool, but it's it's a little bit funky but this is just super clean.
Yeah, we had an accident, and that was the Elvis Presley. And it turned out pretty nice, and so we've just been playing with it ever since. We also have a chemist who helps us, cultivate our yeast and different things like that. So we've really been honing the quality behind the sour, which is something we can't proudly say right now. We can't guarantee that exact same flavor every time. So that's something we're constantly tweaking and working on.
Well, the rafters of the old PX, there's something in there. Yeah, that's amazing. It's super, super drinkable. You could drink a pint of that, pretty quick and be happy. The sourness is just super, super clean. What's the base beer like?
The base beer is just a Kolsch, actually.
Oh.
Yeah, we just went with we don't want too many flavors in it. And so just pretty basic malts, no additional flavors or anything else like that. We really wanted that bacteria and yeast, conglomeration to do its thing and give us exactly whatever the two of them want to do together, So
wow, that's very nice. Well, I've been meaning to get down here for a long time, and I'm glad that I've finally found the reason to, and I hope that it won't be too long till we get back down here again. I appreciate your time, Quentin. I appreciate the beers, and good luck, and have fun during Arkansas Craft Beer Week.
The only thing I would add to it is that, especially, as you said, we've got a lot of craft or home brewers in the society. We do a loyalty program called the Millennium Brew Club. Mm-hmm. So we do reward points here. If they get 1,000 points, they're able to – we show them how to brew beer. We take them through the process. We've had three different people reach the amount of points we needed. So we've got three different beers that were designed by our customers. On top of that, we're doing what's called a midnight brew this Friday the 13th, March the 13th. It's going to be a Friday the 13th where we brew beer all night long. It's going to be a red IPA, and we're going to give it that nice dark red color. So wow. That's another area where we're messing with some coloring. But, if you're a home brewer, keep it up. Please, please, please keep talking to the breweries and giving them some great creative ideas. As the breweries get bigger and bigger, obviously they get farther and farther away from their customers, but don't let that happen, so stay on them. Keep them local and small and everything like that,
Awesome. Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you, guys.
Well, thanks again to Quentin. That midnight brew session does sound fun. And if I were about 20 years younger... That would be a blast. But, I'm old, and I'm ready for bed nowadays about, 8:30, 9 o'clock. What a drag it is getting old. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us for our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.